Psalm 127. We're going to read it again, only five verses. A lot to say in this psalm. Except Jehovah build a house, they labor in vain that build it. Except Jehovah keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to take rest late, to eat the bread of toil, for so he giveth unto his beloved sleep. Lo, children are a heritage of Jehovah, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be put to shame when they speak with their enemies in the gates. In the next psalm, Psalm 128, it is believed by most that the thought continues as one of the few psalms of ascent, when the people were going up to the temple to worship. They would sing these psalms as they would sing praises and honor unto the glory of God. Now, we've noted the point already that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. We note that that's true concerning the nation. That's true concerning the church. It's true concerning your home. Except the Lord build it, then you're just spinning your wheels. The Lord has to have a vital part in it as its founder, or it's not going to work. Now, the premise of this psalm, of course, is especially in our homes. But whatever we do, as we see in Colossians 3 and 17, and we sing that frequently, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. That is, to recognize his place and his authority in whatever we're attempting to do. In 1 Thessalonians 2, the compliment is paid to those in the church at Thessalonica that when Paul came there and preached the gospel to them, they received it as it was indeed the word of truth. What we're looking at here is attitude, our attitude toward God. If God is not the source of what we're trying to do, then it's not going to work. Now again, we've emphasized our home, the church, even our character, the nation, and this next slide is one that's more general, I suppose. If children are to be a heritage, and I asked Caitlin to look that up, the word heritage has to do with being a blessing, as it were. And so we'll see, especially in the latter part of this and in the 28th chapter, 128th chapter. But if children are indeed to be a blessing to us, then that begins with preparation. I know that we sometimes talk about preparation for marriage and what makes a marriage successful or a failure. And those who desire to have a successful marriage must prepare for that. And the goal is to marry someone who likewise has prepared themselves for marriage. Because if one is not prepared, then things generally don't work out quite right. And that involves a lot of elements, physically, emotionally, mentally, but especially spiritually. And I would suggest to you, it begins with commitment to God. I've mentioned this in a number of sermons, both here and in other places, that sometimes when I'm traveling a long distance, I'll listen to some kind of talk radio. Don't do it all the time, but every once in a while, because talk radio keeps you awake. It sometimes is very frustrating, and the frustration will keep you awake. And you say, well, but, and you don't get to talk on the radio. But the point is, I was listening to a radio program one time that was discussing marriage and what made some marriages succeed and what made others seem to be a failure. And the commentator on the radio made the comment that what makes marriages succeed is a commitment to the marriage. And I thought, well, that's true, but that's not near all of it. It needs to back up. Because if one is committed to the marriage, he needs to be committed to God who instituted marriage. If you want it to succeed, then you do what God wants you to do. And you marry somebody that is doing what God wants them to do. and somebody, as we've said so many times, that wants to go to heaven more than anything else. And that's going to help you. It can't do anything else. Now, in our point here is God is the originator of marriage. We talked last week about Elizabeth and Zacharias, who in the New Testament are identified as the parents of John the Baptist. And the text tells us they're old. Elizabeth couldn't have children, but they were both righteous, God-fearing people. Well, they had made preparations, not only for marriage, but preparation for children. I have an assignment and a gospel meeting upcoming to talk about practical side, is the title of the meeting, of Christianity. Well, Christianity is not one of my favorite words. It's a word that was invented by men, but I get the idea that we're to talk about the practical side of being a Christian. And my particular assignment is the practical side of being a Christian in the home. And I'm excited about teaching on that because this is a part of it. The practical side is what you do day after day after day after day after day that demonstrates you're a Christian. That you believe that there is a God and that God created this relationship and that it's a permanent relationship, as we see in Matthew 19, beginning in verse 3. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for just any cause? The Lord said no, and referred to what God had made in the beginning. And then they introduced the subject about Deuteronomy 24 and what Moses had to say about that. And we note again that the answer is no. There's not just any cause, but one cause. And that cause is the cause of fornication, Jesus said. Any cause outside of that, that's unlawful. And then a subsequent remarriage results in adultery. And so that's what we learn on that. Now, if children are to be a heritage, we've got this word preparation up here. It's hard to prepare to do something when you have no concept of what it is that you're trying to do. Does that make any kind of sense? You have no concept of what it is you're trying to do. My point is derived from 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 5 in the list of qualifications of elders. And in that list, we note that a man in order to serve as an elder must have children who believe. And in that context, he said, for if a man knoweth not how to rule his own house, then how can he rule the house of God? Now, that's a legitimate question. If you don't know how, well, what does that suggest to us? If you want to rule your own house, you have to learn how. And that involves some preparation to do that. It's appalling to me that sometimes we just fall into marriage and we just fall into parenthood and we haven't even considered what we want our home to be. And where does that kind of preparation begin? If we want to be successful, where does it begin? At home, yes. But even when you're a little fella, if you've got the godly example of parents and grandparents, and you say, I want my home to be like that. Or if you've had the opportunity to hear a number of lessons on the home, and even as a young person, you say, I want my home to be like that. You're making preparation for children, indeed, to be a heritage that is a blessing. Now, question. Because we make preparation. We've learned what the man's role is to be in the home. We've learned what the woman's role is and what the child's role is in the home. Does that guarantee success?
I mean, that answer is no, but I have to hand up for another reason.
Okay.
I want to make sure that we're emphasizing here, children are a heritage no matter whether you make the preparation or not.
That is true.
This passage is saying that children are a heritage regardless. Speaking from personal experience, there are some Christians that would say, if your child is not born in the proper circumstances, they are not a blessing to you.
Oh, no, that's foolishness.
That is not what this says.
No, that's just foolishness. Now, what we want to see is when everything plays out like the scriptures teach, the blessing is greater. But you're right. Children are a blessing. They're a heritage of the Lord. That's who they are.
And this also considers the fact they might not be your biological children.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's completely beside the point, really, for this point, and certainly for this passage. Okay, that's right. So we want to see in this lesson this morning some things that I think will be helpful to us. And this is where we're going to wind up. The fruits of this kind of commitment will result in this. Ideally, it's not a guarantee. If you do everything right, is it a guarantee that everything's going to turn out right? No. But what if you don't make any effort? It creates a big challenge, doesn't it, for the parents and for the children if you don't make any effort. All right, essential elements. These I'm going to go through quickly because they're applicable to the man's role, the woman's role, and the child's role. Number one, put Christ first. If you don't do that, you've messed up. Put Christ first. Number two, understand who you are. Paul said, it is no longer I that live, but Christ liveth in me. That means he dwells in me. How does he do that? Some kind of a supernatural thing? No. How's Christ dwell in us?
Through the Word living in you.
All right, through the Word living in us, through faith. And you can read that in Ephesians 3, verse 17. If it's not, it's verse 15. But it's right there, Ephesians 3. All right, recognize who you are. Christ living in you. And that requires something of you. And I don't know how to overemphasize this. Study, worship, understand that even of my resources, a portion belongs to the Lord. Well, all of it belongs to the Lord, but I contribute upon the first day of the week proportionally to that which I have earned. And if I'm not willing to do that, then I'm messing up. And know what he teaches. We are familiar with Matthew, the 5th chapter, beginning in verse 13, that you're the light of the world. You're the salt of the earth. That's just who you are. And in order for you to be who you need to be, you need to know and practice what he teaches. Because when you do that, then your light shines and others then glorify God who is in heaven. And that's our objective. Now, to get a little more specific, verse 2. Yes, Randy?
Ephesians 3:17.
Thank you. Ephesians 3:17. All right. Verse 2. It is vain for you to rise up early, to take rest late, to eat the bread of toil, for so he giveth unto his beloved sleep. I think we see in this simply vain attempts to make life as rewarding as it could be. We're going to say, well, I'll get up early, I'll work hard all day, and I'll stay up late working hard all day. And the point is, you can't substitute a long, hard day of work for the things that are necessary for a successful family. You can't do that. You just can't do that. In order to make this happen that we're reading in these two Psalms, it requires something from you. And that doesn't mean working all the time or being gone all of the time. No, you can't do that. And of course, we read about Elizabeth, and we've talked about her, and Hannah in 1 Samuel 1. I think we talked about her last week. Grievous is the child who is unappreciative of his or her parents and lives a lifetime of rebellion. Now, that's not meant to say so. We're going to look at a laundry list of passages just in a moment where the Proverbs say it over and over again. A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bear him. Here's the list. Let's just ponder this for a minute. Proverbs 10, verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise man maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Now, first of all, what is a proverb?
General truth.
We're going to hit that in the lesson this morning. It's a general truth. Now, if a proverb is stated over and over and over and over and over and over saying the same thing, as a general truth, do you think we'd be wise if we'd listen? Now, it doesn't have to use the same words, but the point being established over and over and over again. Proverbs 13:1, a wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scoffer heareth not rebuke. What is a scoffer?
Somebody you mocks or won't listen.
Mocks or won't listen, yeah. Proverbs 15:5. A fool despises his father's correction, but he that regardeth reproof getteth wisdom. This idea of despising and regarding reproof, we're talking about somebody that won't listen versus somebody that will. Proverbs 15:20. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish man despiseth his mother. Proverbs 17:2. A servant that dealeth wisely shall have rule over a son that causeth shame, and shall have part of the inheritance among the brethren. Here we've got a servant that dealeth wisely, rule over a son that causeth shame. Why not? Question? Lynn, okay. Sorry, I didn't see you.
No, I was just, you know, a lot of times when the scriptures say man, it's referring to mankind.
Oh, yes.
And people. Now, I'm assuming the same thing here. Sometimes the father's away, so the mother has to be that lead person, or sometimes they're whoever is the caregiver isn't necessarily the father or the mother. So does that apply that way as well?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, father and mother ought to be the caregiver as we look at the relationship of parents and children.
Well,
that is true. In that case, somebody else does that. Yeah, like Mordecai with Esther. Yeah, got a case in point there. Yeah, very good. Now, but what are these all telling us? Proverbs 17:21. He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow, and the father of a fool hath no joy. A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bare him. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are continual droppings. We won't talk about that right now. Proverbs 19:26. He that doeth violence to his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causeth shame and bringeth reproach. Proverbs 20:20. Whoso curseth his father or his mother, his lamp shall be put out in blackness of darkness. And Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. One of the things you'll see in these Proverbs is the age of the child sometimes differs. Proverbs 23:22. Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Proverbs 28:7. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of gluttons shameth his father. Proverbs 28:24. Whoso robbeth his father or his mother and saith, it is no transgression, the same is the companion of a destroyer. Proverbs 30. There is a generation that curse their father and bless not their mother. Does that sound familiar? Proverbs 30, verse 17. The eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth to obey his mother. The ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it up. Now, dear friends, when we look at so many of these Psalms, or these Proverbs, Psalms too, I just selected from the Proverbs. So many passages that say the same thing. What's the lesson then from all of these?
Pay attention.
Pay attention. That's right. Listen to your father and to your mother. Listen. Listen. You know, there was a movie or a book or something to that effect. I don't recall now. A road frequently traveled or less traveled or something to that. Untraveled. Those that have traveled the path before, you would like to think they've learned something. And we would do well to listen, right?
The condition attached to this is that you need to follow your father's instruction if he's a godly father.
Yes.
If you have an ungodly father, you'd be best not to follow his instruction.
Well, that is right.
And there's a lot of ungodly men that are raising children, a lot of ungodly women that are raising children.
That is right. That is right. And we can look at the case of Manasseh, the king of the people of God, or people of Judah, I believe, in that instance. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah, he tried to undo all the righteous things that Hezekiah had done. He wouldn't listen. He worshiped idols, built idolatrous altars and all of that. And then later in life, he had an awakening, I guess you would call it. He repented of what he did. But then we find that he could not change the heart of the people that he had led to practice idolatry all those years. And then he had a son that did what? Returned to the practices of Ahab that was before them, or Jeroboam that was before them. Yeah, Randy?
I think the application is, you know, Jesus came and called God his Father. And he said, pray in this way, our Father who art in heaven. He wants us to call him Father. That's the Father we should be following.
That's the Father we should be following.
The Father, yeah. The Father's advice,
yeah.
Who is,
yeah.
Uncorruptible.
Yeah.
Every advice that comes from the Father of lights.
That's right.
Good advice.
That's right. The application is that. In these passages, however, he's talking about your mom and dad.
And
if they're godly, yeah. If they're godly parents, yeah. If they'll listen to God and trying to instruct you in the right way, children then are a heritage. Now, question. To your point, Jenny, children are a heritage, whether mom and dad are righteous or not. That's who the child is. Now, whether or not mom and dad recognize that or not, that's just unfortunate. Sometimes mom and dad don't see what they've got. Don't appreciate what they've got. And that's just wrong. And so our point then is in verse 4. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of youth. Need to have a whole lot of them, right? A dozen at least, right? Well, maybe not. The point is, if the arrow is true, then children are as arrows in the hand of a mighty man. Now, question. What makes this thing so applicable? In order for that arrow to hit the target, it can't be crooked. It has to be true. Now, there's a lot of variables on whether or not it's true, whether it's straight, whether it's made properly. That means careful attention is given. I sometimes think of those in times gone by who were archers. You've had some experience with it, but you didn't make your arrows. But suppose you did. You know, from my understanding of some of the history of that, which I find kind of interesting, is it took a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of teaching on how to make an arrow, make it right. Maybe you've tried at times to fletch a piece of flint to make it into a broadhead. That's not easy to do, just so you know. And it can be very dangerous because that piece of flint, or perhaps not flint, but obsidian, is extremely sharp. And that's why that was good material to make arrows. But it takes training to make the arrow right. And the point being is, children are as arrows in the hand of a mighty man. If they're properly trained, they'll hit the mark. Now, does that guarantee that they're always going to hit the mark? We look at the wisdom writer. Have you ever taken an arrow, Richard, that you had bought that was just exactly right, true, in every way, respect, and missed the mark with it? Well, see, it's not all dependent then on the arrow, is it? So what we want to note is our children are that way. Proverbs 22:6, the proverb, the general truth is, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. That's why parents are obligated to bring up their children, as we see in Ephesians 6, specifically fathers, in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And we've looked at these passages a number of times, and strangely enough, as adamantly expressed as that is in these Old Testament texts, Deuteronomy 6, Exodus 12 with the observance of the Passover, Joshua 4 with the pillar of stones at Gilgal where they crossed the Jordan River. Just not long after Joshua died, we read in the book of Judges that we've got another generation on the scene that knew not the Lord, nor the mighty works, underscore that he had wrought in Israel. What mighty works had he wrought in Israel? Look at all the plagues bringing them out. Look at the parting of the Red Sea. Look at the manna and the wilderness and the water coming from a rock and the quail that blew in from an east wind. And look at the provisions that God had done for them. And now in the book of Judges, just shortly after Joshua died, we've got another generation on the scene that knew not the Lord nor the mighty works that he had wrought in Israel. And what's the book of Judges then about? We've got a cycle, round and around the horn. What happened in the book of Judges? Anybody?
You mean what the cycle is?
What's it about? Yeah, Rick, Chris?
You do what God says, he blesses you.
Yeah. And no, they went around that horn about 15 times, wasn't it? In about 305 years. I find that just incredible. They'd obey the Lord for a while, and then they'd start worship idols. God would raise up an oppressor. They'd cry to God for deliverance. He would deliver them. They'd be faithful for a while. Around we go, the same cycle. Wouldn't you think they'd learn? And you know what's the problem in that 305 years? Do you know anybody that's lived 305 years this side of the flood? We've got to keep learning that lesson. Yeah, you see, because in about 70, 80 years, we've got another generation on the scene. And then yet another generation on the scene that has to learn it. Can't we just be smart and learn it from those who've traveled the path before? Oh, no, we're too smart for that, you see. We're too smart for that. Now, that brings us to the next point. In order for children to be arrows or as arrows in the hand of a mighty man, they have to be properly trained. And that takes us again to the Proverbs. Turn with me to Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. Proverbs 13. Randy, you see these on the board. Would you read them for me, please?
13:24.
Yes, sir.
It says, he who withholds his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently.
All right. If he loves him, he'll discipline him or chasten him. All right.
19:18.
Yes, sir.
Discipline your son while there is hope and do not desire his death.
All right. Does that indicate that there may be a time when hope has passed? There's a time when the discipline can be effective and not administered at that time. It won't help later. You miss the window. All right, next passage.
Proverbs 29:15. The rod and the truth give wisdom. The child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. 17 says, correct your son and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul.
Yes, quite a contrast. And that rod that's identified there, let's be specific. What's he talking about?
It was a switch when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, it was a combination of a switch and a belt when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Now, the point being, there's a time when that works. But by the time your kid reaches adulthood, it's a little late for the switch.
Yeah.
It's a little late. All right, next one.
23:13 and 14. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with a rod, he will not die. Mm-hmm. You shall strike him with a rod and rescue his soul from Sheol.
Interesting what a rod does. You know, my mother, she could threaten me, if you do this, I'm going to wear you out. That meant something. But it didn't mean near as much as it did when my dad said it. When Dad said that, man, that caused you to shake in your boots because you knew something was bad going to happen if you didn't mind him. And I've mentioned this a number of times. He went to the old school, born in 1901. His dad, I mentioned this before too, was born in 1848 or 9. So he was brought up by a dad that went to an old school, just so you know. So what do these passages help us to see? We compare that to 1 Samuel 3. You know what's there, I'm sure. Who's 1 Samuel 3 talking about?
Seven.
Pardon me?
Seven.
Okay, what do we learn in that? That's not what I thought it was.
I'm sorry.
Eli is what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I started at the beginning of the chapter.
Okay.
At verse 11.
Yeah, well, what do we learn about Eli?
That his which his sons didn't listen.
Right, they wouldn't listen. And what did Eli do about it when they didn't listen?
Too little, too late.
Yeah, he didn't do much of anything. He just didn't do much of anything. And so, yeah, too little, too late. And so his children grew up to be some bad folks. And here's a good man. I mean, we talk about Samuel and his relationship with King Saul and his rebuke of King Saul and all that. Good man. But his children were not.
He did a much better job with Samuel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. As far as as Samuel going and staying on the path.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we can speculate on that. But here's our point. He did not discipline his children. He did not restrain them. They did as they pleased. And that's a mighty poor philosophy question. Do we have a lot of that going on today? Even in the church? The parents that just don't discipline children, they're allowed to do what they want to with no consequence. Donald knows who I'm talking about, but when we were in Arkansas, we knew somebody that thought that the answer to disciplining the children was to count. And I got so tickled. Son would be way off over yonder out the yard in somebody else's yard doing things he ought not be doing. And she'd say, get back in your yard. And she'd start counting. One, two. You think that kid couldn't count to three? He knew when she was stringing it out. And I'd like to think that our girls, by way of contrast, we didn't count. So what you said the first time around, that went. I know that's how it was when I grew up. Maybe I'm just getting old. I don't know.
Just an observation. The year that Jan decided to get out of the military, we were living on the economy in Flint, Michigan. And there was a little boy across the street, about the same age as Gretchen. And he used to come over and play with my kids. And one day they were in the bedroom, they were jumping on the beds or something, and I went in and told them, I'm off of there, let's not do that. And I could hear in the background my kids mumbling and grumbling, And that little boy said to them, and I could hear him say it, I wish somebody cared enough about me to tell me. And it was just one of the saddest things I had ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, most of us who've worked in the school system any length of time have met kids like that. I didn't work as a full-time every day in the classroom, but I was on call as a substitute for about 10 years. They called me a lot. And it's interesting what some of the kids have at home. Probably worse today. All right, verse 5. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be put to shame when they speak with their enemies in the gate. That's an interesting passage. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. They shall not be put to shame when they speak with their enemies in the gate. The thing I find interesting about that passage is the contrast. The man who has children who are like arrows that are straight and true, that are hit the mark and all of that kind of thing. Even his enemies have to acknowledge the credit of his children. Isn't that a marvel? Even those who would wish him bad things have to acknowledge the credit of his children. Now, that's where that is. Again, Proverbs. My son, be wise and make my heart glad that I may answer him that reproacheth me. You see, the wisdom writer is making a very clear request of his child. Don't live in such a way that will bring shame to you or to your home. That's powerful, isn't it? Don't live that way. Be wise. Make my heart glad. The wisdom writer desired to be proud of the efforts of their son. And let me ask you, dear friends and beloved brethren, what parent wouldn't? Well, again, we see the emphasis on Ephesians 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then fathers, you bring up your children or train them in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. You learn how to do that, and then you bring that to completion.
The interesting thing to me about, especially about all the Proverbs, but the Psalms are making the same point, is that life is cyclical. Parents are also children.
Yes.
And parents are also honoring their parents.
Yes.
It goes on that there are some families who have multiple generations of life at the same time.
Yes.
And some will only have two or three. But either way, even as you're getting older, while you're raising children, you have parents that you want to honor.
Yes.
And you honor them in the way that you live, in the same way you honor God.
Yes. You made my point. I have it on the board. I don't have the specific verse I want to start in, but 1 Timothy chapter 5, if you'll note in verse 4 beginning, it says, if any widow hath children or grandchildren, let them learn first to show piety toward their own family and to requite their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. And then in verse 8, but if any provideth not for his own, and especially his own household, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I've made application of verse 8 so many times, and I'm confident that many of you have too. We talk about a parent providing for his own in this setting, providing for his children. Well, that's true, but that's really not the setting of this passage. The point is true, but the setting of this passage has to do with children and grandchildren providing for their own, which includes mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. Great-grandma and great-grandpa, it's just what you do. You honor them, care for them in that way, and that's the point. Now, the man who's done in Psalm 127, all of these things, that doesn't guarantee that everything's always going to turn out rosy. It just don't. But the man whose life does turn out rosy, if I may use that in quotations, all of these things are applicable, then that man has every reason to be happy, don't he? I think the lesson is profound. Family is so important. Just so important. All right. Well, child left himself. We've got all that. We've talked about the place of a child in the home. He is to be in subjection to his mom and dad. We've looked at that. He's to be a pupil or a learner. In what work I did in substituting, every once in a while you come across a student that is from somewhat of a difficult background, if I can call it that. And I get some of it, that the child has no encouragement perhaps at home, and so they grow up kind of as a know-it-all. And that don't generally work. It don't work in society, don't work in home, don't work in the workplace and all that. So growing up, we need to learn that that's who we are. We're a learner. We're not the boss. We're a learner, a student, a follower. And, of course, we can see an example of that, I think, with Solomon and his son Rehoboam. That always perplexes me when I think on that, because Rehoboam had the opportunity to have the counsel of the wisest, smartest people on earth. And instead, he listened to his younger friends who gave him really poor advice, and it divided the kingdom of Israel, divided. Just tore things all to pieces. In Lamentation chapter 3, verse 27, we're probably not as familiar with that book as we ought to be, but we know that it was written by Jeremiah, and he's writing during a time of rebellion of the people of primarily the southern kingdom of Judah. And he points out what their sin is going to do to them. And Jeremiah, we call Jeremiah the weeping prophet for a reason. Because his tears and lamentations just fill the books of Jeremiah and the book of Lamentation. But in this book, he says, it is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. What's that mean?
Do work when you're young.
It's good to learn how to work and do work while you're young. It is. It's good for you to learn that while you're young. And then, of course, the child is to give honor, and we've talked about the place of that. Any questions or comments over things that we've discussed in Psalm 127? Powerful chapter, just five verses. Psalm 128. Blessed is everyone that feareth Jehovah, that walketh in his ways. For thou shalt eat the labor of thy hands. Happy shalt thou be when it shall be well with thee. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine in the uttermost parts of thy house. Thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, thus shalt a man be blessed that feareth Jehovah. Jehovah bless thee out of Zion, and see thou the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Yea, see thou thy children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Well, there's a lot of goodies in this passage, following on the heels of the previous one. It continues to be a psalm of ascent. And I think in these psalms of ascent, particularly these two, we see that the man or his family, as he would go up to Jerusalem to worship, he would sing praises to God. That's what the psalms are. And look at what he has to praise God for, even his own family. He's thankful. Look at what I have. And so as he attempts to go to the temple to worship, this is what he has. So they go together quite well. Verse 1, blessed is everyone that feareth Jehovah, that walketh in his ways. Why do we need to fear the Lord? Well, there's a lot of reasons. But one is, those who fear the Lord, that gives us a beginning place for wisdom. Now, some time ago, not too many weeks ago, I had an opportunity to study with a fellow who believed that Romans 5, I just call your attention to some of these points, that Romans 5, verse 12, teaches that all men are sinners because of what Adam did in the Garden of Eden. That's a very popular view. But I would call your attention to just read the text. Romans 5, verse 12, just doesn't say that. Now, it does introduce in verse 13 and following, verse 14 specifically, that Adam introduced sin into the world, but because of what Adam did, that don't make you guilty of sin. Don't. Now, if you'll notice in Romans 5, verse 12, it says, therefore, as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death passed into all men, for that all have sinned. Yes, Adam introduced it. But notice the text does not say that death passed into all men, for that Adam sinned. The text tells us that death passed unto all men for that all sinned. And that becomes the point that's established in the third chapter. And the fellow that I was studying with, strangely enough, he had gone back to pick up a couple of verses from the third chapter that I want to read to you. In verse 10 of chapter 3, and I would urge you to look at your Bible because there's kind of a laundry list, several quotations from the Old Testament text, primarily from the Psalms, not all of them. Most of them. And in verse 10 it says, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They have all turned aside. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not so much as one. Now his conclusion, and of course you can read the rest of these, but his conclusion is that there's not one that does what's right because we have a sinful nature and we've inherited that from Adam, so we can't do anything but sin. And I said, I want you to notice something. I believe you've misused these quotations and misused certainly this text. Because one of the quotations is recorded for us here in verse 18. And in verse 18, you'll notice, again, it is from the Psalms. And it says, there is no fear of God before their eyes. Now, we're going to attribute that to all the masses of humanity and say, well, there's no fear of God in their eyes, because they didn't have any choice. They didn't fear God because Adam didn't fear God. Now, we want to follow that to its logical end. So whose fault is it that man didn't fear God for generation after generation after generation? We say, well, that's because of the decision that Adam made. Man just don't fear God. I would suggest to you that if that be the case, the numerous commandments to fear God have no place. Why would we be commanded to do something that's impossible for us to do because we've inherited this sinful nature?
It's believing that we inherited Adam's sin is really making the same sin that Adam did. When God called Adam and said, you know, what have you done? What was Adam's response? It was the woman you gave me.
Yeah.
He pointed his finger at God and said, it's your fault.
That's right.
That's what Adam did. So saying that Adam sinned, therefore we're sinners, that's us doing the same thing.
That's
us pointing our finger at God and saying, it's your fault I'm a sinner, not my problem.
And the whole system of Calvinism is built around that error.
Yeah, it's foolishness.
It's just foolishness. Now, as you note in the text of Romans 3, in verse 21 it says, but now apart from the law, a righteousness of God hath been manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus unto all them that believe, for there is no distinction, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Now, why are you identified as a sinner? Because of what Adam did? Or because of choices you've made? You can't get away from choices. We all make choices, and there are consequences to choices. Both physical, temporal, as it were, and spiritual consequences for sin that we have committed. I think this is important. Blessed is the man that fears God and walks in His way.
But in all those verses, nothing says about Adam.
No, these quotations are from the Psalms, and they're not referencing man's this way because of Adam. No, it's not because of what Adam did. Now, the fear of the Lord, I said, why would we be commanded to fear God if it was something that was not possible for us to do because of our nature? We just don't have the ability to do that. Psalm 39, or 19, I'm sorry. The fear of the Lord is related to His law, and it's described as clean and enduring forever. Psalm 111. He hath sent redemption unto His people. He hath commanded His covenant forever. Holy and reverend is His name. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do His commandments. His praise endureth forever. Proverbs 1:7. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of knowledge. But the foolish despise wisdom and instruction. Proverbs 8:13, the fear of Jehovah is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy, and the evil way, and the perverse mouth do I hate. Proverbs 10:27, it prolongs our days, it brings us confidence, and is a fountain of life. So the conclusion then of the wisdom writer is that the very purpose of your existence is to fear God and do what He says. Now why would God say, this is why you're here, to fear God and do what I tell you to do? It's for your good. My commandments are for your good always. Why would He say these things if it's not possible to do anything but commit sin? Well, He would.
And the conclusion of Ecclesiastes.
Yes.
It says to fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole of man.
It's all there is to it. That's right. For every work.
The whole reason you exist.
That's right. Yeah. That's the whole of all of it. All right, we'll come back to this.